if journalism was a sport like football, he would be playing the journalism equivalent of how La Roja played against Uruguay in that first half 2 nights ago. He is, of course, Mr. Graham Hunter, joining us here on the show. He can do so much more with his words than with the boot. We're delighted to be joined by him today. Graham, how are you doing today, mate? It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's a rare experience, but I think I'm speechless.
It's always a pleasure to be joined by you and to get your insight on all things Spanish football. There's plenty of Spanish football to talk about. Before we do, I just want to quickly ask you, because you're a man that's seen plenty in the world of football, what do you make of these director of football positions that get appointed to previous footballing managers? Do you think it's a positive thing to have in football, or do you think it undermines the manager in charge?
I think it's a very simple concept, and it's patently a good, successful, intelligent concept, so long as it's well-structured, that the right people are involved, and that people are given information at the right time. I suspect that although we've got you've got a North American audience very broadly and a world audience, I suspect your elbow's been nudged into that question by the fairly chaotic way in which Joe Kinnear has announced himself as director of football at Newcastle. And I'll declare a hand here, in all my dealings with Joe Kinnear, I've found him to be a buffoon. I would never have appointed him to any post that had the word football or director in it. I think that when you look at, now not only speaking specifically about Newcastle United, but I think if you talk about the concept of the role, specifically as you did, when you get a guy who goes out and scouts the market and signs in the way that Graham Carr has been doing, in my book, extraordinarily astutely, extraordinarily successfully, I see him in Europe, I see him in Spain, we bump into each other at games, and without being friends, I see the reason why he consistently picks up very talented players for low fees who then come and succeed at Newcastle and get sold for big fees. If you're appointing a director of football in the role that I've seen in my European travels, where it's more generally accepted and successful, then you need to be very careful in that. Why would you glue on somebody who knows very little about the market, full stop, particularly the foreign market, when you, as in charge of somebody who's exceptionally successful already in that area? I would say that that flies in the face of what I see, for example, in a place like Levante. Let's go to a smaller example than going straight to Real Madrid or AC Milan or Bayern Munich. Mm. You know, there's a director of football at Levante who, in tandem with the president, Kiko Catalan, who wanted to make sure that Levante came out of administration, began to pay their creditors successfully, but also could rise up the divisions and be successful, not as successful as they've been. I think that was beyond their wildest dreams. You got a man named Salvador there, whose direction of football has been exceptional in terms of which coaches they've chosen, in terms of which players he's able to get in order to fortify the team, play the style of football that the coach wants, but also then that they make money on the players. It has been an extraordinary success. And if either the previous manager or Jose Ignacio Martinez, Jim, had been asked to undertake all of that work themselves, plus make sure that a team which has been cobbled together for the least amount of outlay, if you demanded that of your coach, then Levante probably wouldn't have stayed in the Primera, probably wouldn't have qualified as high up the league as they did and played European football and kept on paying their creditors and kept on paying their staff and run the operation on a profit. And therefore, the director of football role in that instance, or in the instance of Monchi in his golden years at Sevilla, when Sevilla come up and President Del Nido make sure that Munchie is the director of football. They went through a spell where they produced Ramos and Navas and Reyes through the ranks, but they signed Baptista and Dani Alves and Canute and Luis Fabiano for extraordinarily low fees, and Adriano and Renato and Palop from Valencia. And that led to them winning two UEFA Cups, the Copa del Rey, the Spanish Super Cup, and also the UEFA Super Cup, thrashing Barcelona, who were European champions at the time. And that is augmented by the fact that the three or four of those players in the middle of Sevilla's golden reign, given that they hadn't won a trophy for half a century, three or four of those players were sold for 100 million euros on a profit, I calculated at the time, of something like 80 million euros. So in the face of those two relatively middle-of-the-road examples, Ollie, if somebody was to come and say that the director of football role is unnecessary or doesn't work, then frankly I'd tell them that they're either, you know, stupid or obstinate or a potent combination of both. And then when you get to the very, very big clubs, let's take Bayern Munich with Sammer, for example. Mm. I do not believe that the jump from two seasons without the Bundesliga, which Bayern Munich suffered, two seasons when Dortmund were champions of Germany, last season when they were absolutely thrashed by Borussia Dortmund in the Pokal Cup final, and then, okay, they walked into a lamppost against Chelsea. They had a black eye by not looking carefully, and they bumped into a lamppost and they lost that game. Over 90 minutes, over 120 minutes, that can happen. But this summer, they sit as tri-champions for the first time in their history. The minor amendments which were made with Mandzukic and Dante, and the way in which it's been acceptable to change their wages policy and their buying policy and what they'll buy for, and the way in which Javi Martinez was bought for 40 million euros. Anybody, again, who says that the director of football, Matthias Sammer, hasn't had a palpable role in moving Bayern Munich, Ollie, to say this is the most successful season in Bayern Munich's history, think how incredible, given how rich their history has been, that statement is. And it is not divorceable from the extra element which Sammer has added at the Allianz Arena. So there are all manner of ways of explaining why it's good for structure, why a layer of management between a board and the coach is important. There are all manners of ways of explaining why division of tasks, implementation of strategy. If you look at Manchester City and the word when Ferran Soriano, in dismissing Roberto Mancini despite him winning trophies, said he was looking for a more holistic situation. Now, maybe some of your audience already understand what that means and how it applies to sport, but in the UK, there was a pathetic degree of scratching of heads and, you know, making screwing up of faces and theatrical gestures about let's not use big words in football, when all holistic meant was they wanted the owner's aims and the executive's strategy to be applied correctly down via the coach and the players, so that in terms of what were day-to-day standards at work, what were the way in which they were supposed to train and play, what were acceptable goals for the season, and what was an acceptable way for the club's personality to evolve under this ownership. All of those were things that needed to be monitored, guarded, and developed by Chicky Bagirastain, who's the director of football. They wanted Mancini to fall in line and to be part of that holistic process, but effectively all they wanted from him other than that was, you know, a winning atmosphere and trophies and development. The gatekeeper of that was Chicky Bagirastain, who again is director of football. So the fact that England is slow to understand the concept, the fact that sometimes either owners of clubs in England or directors in England glue on the concept to a system which isn't ready to accept it doesn't undermine the value of the original concept.
Graham, I have to ask, have you ever thought about writing a dissertation or anything like this? Because
I was reading off somebody else's dissertation there. Right. I don't have original material like that.
You've been lying to us all these years, I tell you. It's all other people's stuff that he's stealing. No, Graham, we have to get into the Spanish football as well, but let's take a look at the under-21s who are in action tonight against the Italian under-21s in the under-21 European Championships final. And it's no secret that these two sides met in the Senior European Championships final last summer. Is this under-21 side getting ready to take the mantle slightly to start bringing these players, these 22, 23-year-old players in this squad, into the senior side? Because they have been very, very impressive with the way they've handled themselves in this tournament, that's for sure.
Look, I think there's a possibility. You might say that people are already asking whether David De Gea had a case to be third-choice goalkeeper ahead of Pepe Reina. I would have said no, simply because David De Gea's excellence has been an 8-month thing or a 7-month thing rather than a 7-year thing. I would have also said that people who ask that question don't know about the value Pepe Reina as a man, as a teammate, as a squad mate, has brought to these three trophies that Spain have won, even though he's only played one game in the three competitive trophies. So you could, but it would be stupid not to say that De Gea is a candidate to meet your question. I think that long before this under-21 championship, Ollie, Isco proved that if there was something amiss with Silva, Iniesta or Mata, which makes it already quite a long queue, then Isco could step into the national team and play right now. I don't think there's a question about that. Thiago is there as captain. Thiago, if they win tonight, is about to win his second. I don't think any side, it's been a while since I sat down and researched it, but I don't think any side has retained this under-21 championship. If Spain win it, they'll go to 4 of these trophies compared to the 5 that Italy already have. But Thiago, who's captaining the side in this match, has played significant national team games. So again, he meets your description. Whether there are a host of others, I'm not so sure. Ea Marendi is patently a midfield player of the identikit qualities which would allow him to fit into the middle of the midfield for the Absoluta, the national team, in due course. But I don't think that's now. Inigo Martinez at centre-back gets a lot of good press, but I personally think that he is still very raw. Where you might want to invert your question and say, to what degree are we seeing the next generation, the natural reserves for this national team, once there begin to be retirements next summer, which I think we might see one or two people saying, I've now had my time with the national team at the end of the Brazil World Cup, not at the end of the Confederations Cup. So I would have said that while there are a clutch of players who have shown them the expertise and the maturity and the quality to step in from time to time in this full national team, I don't think that we're ready for a sudden surge from this group. And you need to remember that 8 of this group that are there tonight are qualified to play in the under-21 championship again next season. So in all honesty, while in a 90-minute game against an Italian side, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that Italy win this at all. And it would take me back, to the beginning of the first tournament I reported on, Ollie, was, as a full-time reporter at least, was in 96 when it was Spain-Italy in the under-21 finals in Montjuic in Barcelona. And the Spain team had Raul and De La Peña and Cesc Mendieta, and the Italians were Totti, Panucci, Maldini, Buffon, Tacchinardi, Inzaghi. It was an extraordinary side. And in those days, Spain didn't know how to win. And Italy were down to 10 men within 10 minutes, drew 1-1, played 120 minutes, and won on penalties, which the Italians did then. And I think that my point is that this group is good enough to win tonight, Spain. I think they will win tonight. And to be quite frank, I think Spain will win again next summer.
it wouldn't surprise anybody if Spain would continue their dominance of the international game, that's for sure. Graham, the senior squad put out a fantastic performance against this a poor Uruguay side, in fairness. The way Uruguay played was very disappointing to a number of people. But that dominance that we were talking about at the end of the season, of the rise of German football, Spanish football in the last few weeks has shown, at least on the international stage, they're still kings. And that performance I felt against Uruguay was very similar to Barcelona of a few years ago, in that pace in the attack was back. There wasn't too much dawdling around on the ball. How impressed and how much of a flashback did you think that Spanish performance had back to Barca of a few years back?
No, I'd underline all your points. I think you're on the money there. I think that it would be utterly stupid and one-eyed not to recognise and applaud the rise of German football. But, you know, did Germany come out of the group in the under-21s? I don't think so. Would Bayern Munich have defeated Barcelona, never mind defeated them by 7 goals, had they played in the autumn? Well, I saw Bayern Munich at the Mestalla clinging on to draw 1-1 against a 10-man Valencia side, and Barcelona in the autumn would have taken Bayern Munich's pants down. I'm very encouraged. I'm very supportive of the upsurge in German power, given that it's based on long-term planning, skills development, intelligence, and it's an extremely attractive brand of football to watch. Mm. And as the Spaniards discovered by fluke, the Germans have naturally, that if you blend top-level technique with physique and power, which, you know, genetically Germany have been able to do much more easily than Spain, but Spain have been able to do because of the Anglo-Saxonization of Spanish football, given the way in which Alonso and Arbeloa and Reina and Torres and Piqué and Cesc, you know, have had time in England and brought those values back to Spain. That DNA, that genetic Molotov cocktail has been very successful for Spain, and it partly explains why German football is so successful and attractive right now. But you pinpointed something that Spain played like, you know, the ball moved like an ice hockey puck once again against Uruguay. They didn't finish enough chances. They left themselves vulnerable. But broadly, it was a very, very good display. Where was that speed of football for either Real Madrid or Barcelona in April? You know, it's a very short time from the autumn, winter, when Barcelona were exceptional, absolutely exceptional, to their horrendous form in April. And it's a very short time from April until now. And you begin to wonder about their preparation, their fitness training, when they plan to peak in a season. You also wonder about mentally the burnout factor of having Mourinho in the middle of the Clásico battles, how much that has cost several of the players on both sides. And right now, with Mourinho gone, with the domestic season over, with one player missing, Xabi Alonso's missing. Xabi Alonso's a player who maybe right now isn't the most popular with the Barcelona footballers. Maybe that's changed the atmosphere a little bit. There's been a relaxation in terms of how they take training, how fresh and fit they look, how much they're enjoying their football again. And I think that at the time, you needed to be very careful in April when Dortmund were putting 4 past Real Madrid and Bayern were doing the same against Barcelona in the first leg. You needed to be very careful in defending Spanish football, not to sound like a PR man, not to sound like Cyclops. Mm. What you've pinpointed now is that there was never a collapse of Spanish football. There was a collision of an irresistible object and a movable force. That's all that happened in the spring. And it needs to be understood that some of Barcelona's key players are getting older. Some of them are more frail. And I think that the burnout factor is very, very high. Does that mean in any way that in the right conditions they are not the best group of players in the world? Most certainly that doesn't follow.
The Spain side has kind of gone over this ride now, and you look at the starting lineup that played on against Uruguay. So much of it, and you mentioned Xabi Alonso missing, but and so much dominance in that Barca side especially. Does Sergio Busquets, with Xabi Alonso missing, does he replace him maybe in a better position than Xabi Alonso because he's surrounded by these players that he knows so well?
Look, I I watched the single pivot scheme get torn to shreds by France in the Calderon last winter, when, although they only France only equalised late on, they deserved to win the game. Spain were extremely ragged, and France ran the game in a way that we've been unaccustomed to. Certainly during Luis Aragonés's latter 2 years, 2007-2008, but from then onwards, when it's been a double pivot, largely Busquets and Alonso, not solely, but largely. Against Finland, when they also drew 1-1, although Finland are regarded correctly as a lesser football nation, the gaps in midfield were evident when it was Sergio Busquets alone and he wasn't fully fit. And the goal, which Finland scored, and those two draws until Spain went and won in Paris, those two draws, or let's lay it down, were threatening Spain's participation in the next World Cup, threatening their ability to defend their title. So if you're eulogising Sergio Busquets and how good he is, how intelligent he is, and how fundamental to the style he is when he's fully fit, then I'm with you all the way. If the argument is, because we've now seen Spain playing well against a very poor Uruguay side, still only winning 2-1, and if the argument now is they suddenly don't need to play with a double pivot, that Xabi Alonso is not so relevant, then I'm a firm disagreeer. And it's not just me. I'm writing a new book about Spain at the moment. In May, when I sat down with Fernando Torres, one of the key points he made is, you know, before we won the European Championship in 2008, we were rubbish. We couldn't defend. The coach needed to be sacked. Then we won it. And from the moment we won it, it wasn't good enough if we weren't winning 5-0 all the time. And from the moment in which we instituted a double pivot to organising, what would you call it, probing, I don't like the term holding, but organising intelligent traffic controlling midfielders in the centre of the pitch. Torres's point was, from the minute we instituted that and started winning 1-0 all the time, the media critics said, we've got to change that system. He said to me, why is it that as soon as we're doing well, everybody thinks that they've got the capacity to reinvent things? Mm-hmm. So I only go with half of your premise. Busquets fit, very good. Busquets and Alonso fully fit, Spain unbeatable.
I do apologise, Graham, but we could honestly listen to you speak and go on at great length about Spanish football for probably the hours that are left in the day here at World Football Daily, but we are going to have to let you go. We appreciate you giving us so much insight and so much depth into your answers today, Matt, and we always appreciate you taking the time out to join us here on WFD, mate.
Ollie, enjoy your football. To everybody out there listening, enjoy your football, and let's see if Spain can do it tonight against Italy.
Let's hope for Spanish football's sake that they can once again disprove everybody who's saying it's the rise of German football. Thank you so much, Graham Hunter, for joining us today. Graham Hunter on the line giving us his in-depth analysis into all things Spanish football, and such a fantastic writer, fantastic journalist. And honestly, as I say, I could just sit here and listen to Graham talk for hours on end. A man who could do the same and who's joining me now, of course, at this time of the show, is, as always, is Rafa.